going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And welcome you into another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Redbird and A Medlock 1 on Twitter. We're coming to you Monday night, a little bit different than normal. The schedules are as they are, and so Monday night might be our time for another 2 or 3 weeks. So hopefully, but this way, if nothing else, next week we'll have a couple of games to talk about instead of being right beforehand. But we're still a week away from games. But the Cardinals are all in Jupiter. Everybody's reported. Most everybody was down there well early, but everybody was supposed to be down there yesterday. Alan, I don't think I saw anybody that just reported yesterday. I think everybody was there sometime by middle of last week. Unless you saw something I didn't.
Yeah, well, the last two were Sosa and Yanyaro Munoz. And they showed up, I believe it was yesterday afternoon, and that would have made them the last two guys to make it, but it was still clear of a day of, the reporting date, you know, so yeah. And it was funny. I know that Danny Mac today on his podcast and on 101 this morning made the comment that this is the first year in a long time that they haven't had any visa issues or guys that couldn't make it for travel issues. So I felt like that was, I felt like that's a good thing. You know, there's always one of those that there's a late for whatnot, and you kind of have to roll your eyes. You know, I mean, that sounds terrible, but I'm glad that we don't have to deal with that this year.
Yeah, you told me that, and I don't know if it's just because the roster is made up a little different, or it's people that have gone back and forth enough that the visa issues aren't necessarily going to pop up, or if people just started the process earlier and got into town. You know, so many of them are in it when a warm up and things like that. I don't know. I don't know what the issue is. I'm just glad that they didn't have to worry about it this year, because that has thrown some. There's a couple. What was it? Was it Carlos that one year that was really late because of a visa issue? Somebody was that it kind of really kind of messed with their spring training, I think, because they didn't get into the camp in time.
Well, and I was trying to think about, I remember that one, but wasn't there a situation at one point where they were worried about Jose Martinez and the Venezuela factor? And that may not have been anything, but I was thinking within his 2 or 3 years that he was there, there was something, some kind of issue, but I may be wrong about that.
I don't remember him having a visa issue. I think there's always that concern when a ball player goes back to Venezuela.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's been some kidnappings, there's been some, you know, things like that. And so I think there may be that kind of concern. I don't know if there was anything, you know, legal, whereas they didn't think he'd get back in the country or anything like that. So, but I can't, you know, might have been. I don't remember one though.
Yeah, no telling.
Yeah. So it's not spring camp until somebody's hurt. And so it's spring camp because Miles Michaelis has come up lame. Kind of stuff that he dealt with a lot last year, which I don't, were we talking about this last year? Or is this one of those things they kind of kept under their hats? Because I don't necessarily remember us, you know, factoring in that, oh, he's hurt, into some of these responses, especially when he's, you know, pitching to the playoffs. I don't, maybe it came up after the season, but I don't remember a whole lot of talk about this.
Yeah, I don't remember any talk about it. It's funny that I was going to bring that up. A couple points on that is, you know, they were really quick to announce the Martinez PRP injection, and it's kind of funny that they did not announce Michaelis at all. You know, that's, I don't remember reading about that anywhere, and that was the first thing that came to mind this morning. It's funny. There's always that, the mystery protocol that they're going to go through, and that makes it sound like I'm saying something negative about the medical staff, and I'm not. It's just because I know that there's so many things out there, and medical science has changed so much that you never really know, and they're going to go through different protocols, and they seem to have eliminated any UCL/Tommy John issue, which I find it hard to believe a little bit. Not that they wouldn't lie to us, but there's too many correlations behind it, and it kind of concerns me. I made this comment on Twitter, and I was completely genuine about this. I was surprised that it took almost a week for us to hear about anything, not necessarily from Michaelis, but from any player. Usually when they have that first physical or that first throw day, within the first 1 to 2 to possibly 3 days of camp, you usually hear about an injury. So I was pleasantly surprised that it took so long. I hate that it's Michaelis, and I hate that it's immediately in the rotation. But you almost factor in one of those every year. Just as you said, you know, spring doesn't start until someone gets hurt. And, you know, here we have it. But I'm really curious to see the protocol that they're going to follow to get him back. I felt like there was, you know, the reporting today was saying so they're going to look at some alternative methods, as in it hadn't gotten worse, but it hadn't gotten better, meaning, you know, that's going to be interesting to see how he handles it and what they follow, you know, moving forward. But yeah, you're right. It's one of those that stinks, especially for a good guy like that. Not that it would be any better with some guy that you don't like, because there's not any of the guys that we don't like. But yeah, it should be interesting moving forward. And I'm really curious to see. Now, in Schilt's presser today with the media, he made the comment that something should come out today, if not no later than tomorrow morning. So we may have a pretty good idea in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah, and it, you know, it really feels like, I don't know, Tara and I on Gateway last night were trying to figure out when you'd want to see Miles Michaelis back, and so you'd feel pretty good about him starting the season. And I think it'd have to be like in a couple of weeks, and I don't know that we're going to see that. It really feels to me, reading more about it today and hearing more about it, it's a real long shot, it feels like, that he's going to be ready for opening day. Now, he might be ready sometime in April, and that's fine and dandy. But, I mean, and you know more about this than I do, but it just kind of feels like with him having to sit out, and I know he's doing a lot of the fielding and the conditioning and all that kind of stuff, but he's not throwing. It feels like he's not necessarily going to get a chance to build up to what he needs to be as a starter before opening day at this rate.
Exactly. Well, and I read a piece today that said a second PRP treatment may be the option. Well, I can tell you that would be from the minute he's injected, that's probably 14 days before he would even be considered to take the mound. Yeah. You know, so that pushes you back 2 weeks. And I understand being the 17th of February, there's not that a lot of urgency. But, you know, when this happens early in camp, he's going to have to work up. So that already puts him in danger. So that'll be interesting to see how they announce that. Other than that, I don't really know. I heard today that they're going to look at maybe a 6-man rotation, and that within the first week of games, every pitcher is going to pitch some, as opposed to last year where, you know, Hicks didn't throw for a while, Miller didn't throw for a while, that they're going through a new program with Michaelis or without. So it sounds like they're being rather aggressive, which kind of tells me that he may get put on the back burner just a little bit, just to make sure that he's healthy in the way that they're handling this.
Yeah. Did I read somewhere? I thought I did, that they were talking about, you know, the piggyback method for the first time or two around too, where, you know, you might have Flaherty pitch 2 innings and then Wainwright pitch 2 innings. And then the next day it might be Martinez and Kibb or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. And then they're going to do the just like that, the back-to-backs, and then they're going to wean those off to where they're going to line it up to where when guys start dropping off, then you're just going to push that guy back a day to get that next start. So yeah. That makes a whole lot of sense. And like I read somewhere today, and I can't remember where it was, that they may make their first cuts of camp within that first week, like after 5 games. Which I thought was pretty interesting, and you pointed out that it was a little bit later last year. So I think that they're putting a lot of emphasis on this first week.
Well, and I mean, this year they don't have the step camp, so a lot of these guys that would be in step camp are in the major league camp. And so they've got, what, they got 70-something people or something in camp? I mean, it's like one of the most, the biggest camps, I think, in Major League Baseball this year, this spring. So I'm not surprised at earlier cut. I don't remember when the minor league The only thing that I would say would hold against them cutting this week is I don't know when minor league camps open. I think I read something that might be a little bit later, like it's sometime in March, you know, maybe that first week of March or so. And so I don't think they make any cuts until they've got a place to send those guys to.
Yeah, my prep work was terrible because I meant to look that up after you and I were talking about that this morning. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to look that up because it may have to coincide with when those guys get here. And unfortunately, I'm just not sure.
Well, nobody listens to the show because we prep for it. So
okay. Yeah, it's the comedy.
We just, yeah, the comedy. That's how bad we can be at picking something up. But I guess that's probably what it is. anyway, so if Michaelis is out, let's just assume he's not there for opening day. I'm hoping like a May 1st type of comeback for Michaelis. That's kind of, you know, me being slightly pessimistic and trying not to get too worked up about things. Like you said, sometimes these sort of things blossom into something else, and that would really, really be bad. But if Michaelis is out, that really does kind of make this give it a little bit more of that competition we keep talking about. You know, I know you and I, we've talked about it. Sometimes it's not really a true competition, but if there's really truly an opening now in the rotation, it may not be a long lasting opening, but there is one. So, you know, you've got Kim, you've got Gomber, you've got Ponce de Leon, you got these guys, you know, obviously Carlos Fortunas is already in that mix, but he was probably already in the rotation anyway. So, those guys got a chance to step up and at least, hey, if you could pitch well and if you could take that spot for a month, you know, if you pitch well in that first month, if not, you know, it makes it harder for them to send them down, or it increases your trade stock. One of the two. So I think these guys, I know they don't want to see Michaelis go down, but they've got to realize that they've, you know, got a little bit more of an opportunity than they really had before.
Yeah, that, you know, and that's a good point. It's something that that I hadn't thought about either. If they feel like Michaelis comes back in May, do you think that's more would make them lean toward more of a Ponce de Leon / Helsley spot in the rotation as opposed to a KK Kim? And the fact that if they think he's coming back, would there be any setback if they immediately put Kim back in the bullpen as opposed to the rotation? Whereas with a Ponce or a Helsley, I think you have a little bit of leeway where you could move them one way or the other. Helsley even being to Memphis if you had the option. And I wonder if that would come into play in a situation, if it was a situation where they truly felt like he could come back in May.
Maybe. I mean, I could see that. I could also see the argument that Kim's been a starter. He's still, you know, developing as a starter. And it's easier to slide him from a starter to, you know, a long relief role, you know, a guy that's going to pitch a couple innings here and there in the bullpen.
Do you run into the situation where he pitches too well to move him back, though?
Always a possibility. And if that's the case, then somewhat of a good problem to have, I guess, because, you know, then you might be looking at Dakota Hudson and saying, you know, where is he at? You know, I think a lot of us have been concerned about what kind of regression we're going to see out of Hudson, or if he's going to be able to beat those peripherals that he had last year. So if Kim is pitching well, and assuming everybody else is pitching well, then you start looking at that weaker link. And if it's Hudson, you know, I don't like him in the bullpen, but you could send him back to Memphis if he's struggling, and he may not be. And if he's not, I mean, if you've got five pitchers going well before Michaelis comes back, it's that proverbial good problem to have. But I think you'd probably be able to move Kim to the bullpen okay there. But, you know, again, maybe you do. Maybe you say, okay, we're going to put Austin Gomber in there, and he's going to get a month of starts. And if he does well and Michaelis goes back, then we could trade him for something. I don't know. I don't know how they'll go at it. I mean, it really does seem to depend on what the results are this spring.
It's very true. And the scary thing about this is, you know, these things do have a way of working themselves out. And, you know, whether that's performance or injury, you know, that we're hoping it's performance, but per se, then not lose anybody else for an extended period of time. That's, you know, like we said when Ben was on with us last week, the area where I feel like they develop so well and can take a bump like this is definitely the rotation. So I'm glad to see that in the outset.
Yeah, because if they had lost somebody kind of key to the offense, that would have been an issue. I mean, the offense struggles. Is it up if it is? And if you lose somebody like a Colton Wong or a Tommy Edman or something like that, and you're like, we're already trying to make up for Ozuna. And then you're trying to make up for the fact that they weren't any good last year to try to get it back to league average. And then you have to try to do that from the loss of a guy like Edmund or Wong or somebody like that. That would be terrible.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, arms are what they could replace. I think I'd rather have a bullpen arm to go down than but it depends on the bullpen arm too. Because a lot of those guys are pretty important as well.
Well, and you know what? It's funny. What kind of changed my opinion just in the last 5 minutes is the fact that, you know, I go Ponce and Helsley just because I think Helsley's the up-and-comer that's making a lot of noise, and Ponce is the guy that I think is probably next in line. But then you go Gomber, and I was thinking, I didn't even think about that. Well, that's three guys right there, and we're not even getting into the other guys that are making huge impressions right now, between Thompson and Libertor and, you know, those guys that are making impressions that aren't going to be there. But it is interesting that there are guys knocking on the door. And, you know, that's the thing that I have a really good friend who's a Cubs fan. And that's what I was telling him. I was like, it's amazing to me the things that the Cardinals can develop and the Cubs can't, and kind of vice versa a little bit. And when you look at the pitching, you're just like, you know, I don't know if you can ever truly have enough because things happen. But it is pretty impressive to see what they've built up.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it, a few years ago, Cardinals kind of ran through every arm they had, but they had those arms to run through. If they hadn't had them, they'd been in really bad shape. The only thing with Helsley, and you know, we've mentioned this before, but it does feel like he's getting a little bit of buzz for that closer role. That's, you know, because there's somebody's got to take that closer role until Jordan Hicks comes back after the All-Star break, and maybe after, because I'm not 100% sure they're going to throw Jordan Hicks right into the ninth inning. When he comes back, we'll have to see. I guess it depends on how his rehab goes, but I think there might be a little bit of a workup there. But I feel like there's a little bit of a, I don't know that the club has said anything, but at least in the fan base, there's this a little bit of a groundswell for putting Helsley there, even though a lot of us, and I know you do, I would like to see it, would think that maybe he should get a shot at that starting rotation. It feels like he's, I don't want to say he's ticketed for the bullpen, because there is this open spot now, and maybe if he pitches really well, he'll get a shot at it. But that's almost, as we say all so often, the path of least resistance is to put him in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning and maybe take that closer role because of what he has.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hope he makes the I do hope that he makes the ball club. And there, you're right, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but I think it's funny how if it's kind of an open competition, but I don't think that you would hear a lot of complaints if we told them or that we knew anyway, and the organization would be pretty happy with this, that Helsley can come in and be your closer and Reyes can be your Carlos Martinez type guy in the bullpen. I think they would be pretty happy if that was the case in June.
Yeah. But do you think there's a possibility, again, and we'll transition a little bit, you know, Reyes threw to this today, looked really good from all accounts. He was pleased with his mechanics. He's obviously not hurt yet that we know of. Do you think there's, with this opening, is he in that mix too to be a starter? I kind of, you know, I've wanted to say that he's going to start at Memphis. He's going to build up some stamina. But I know that Kyle has said this about Zach Thompson, about the fact that he's had arm issues in the past, and you don't want to waste a whole lot of bullets in the minors. You know, the Cardinals may say, I could see them saying, he missed 17, he missed 18, he missed 19. If he's ready to go, we want to get something out of him, and we'll put him in the starting rotation if he looks like he can handle it. I mean, what are the odds of that happening?
Let me preface this by saying that's exactly what I want to happen. And not necessarily because of the bullet factor, which could very well be true, and maybe the best bet to play anyway. But I think that he's so electric, and he makes such an impression when he does throw that I still think they're going to handle it with kids' gloves. And I think that the only way that he's going to make it onto the big league roster, which I do think he's going to make it on the big league roster. If not, if he does anything, it'll be a short period of time in Memphis if he's not throwing strikes. That will be the caveat on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that they're going to try to bank those innings without trying to make him a starter this year. And I think that they want to have him fill a pretty electric role in the bullpen this year, see if he comes back healthy, and really make a run at the rotation next year. And I know that for somebody that's been out essentially 3 years, that's a pretty long play. But I think that's probably what they're going to do, because if you notice that there just hasn't been a whole lot of hubbub about him starting yet. But that's what I want to see happen, because you can just tell by the way that he makes impressions on people that there's a lot of respect and hope for what he can bring. I was watching those batting practice sessions today, and you really can't tell from the side angle view, but man, it's so nice just to see him out there again. And he's such a weapon. So I pull for him probably more than any Cardinal right now. And it's one of those situations where it kind of worries me that when he does look this good this early, because that's usually when the glass breaks, which I hope doesn't happen. But it's fun to watch right now, and I would love to see that rotation spot. And it's funny, immediately after, I actually, you and I talk about this a lot, and it, over the past few years, you know, Daniel and I have talked about this. They usually telegraph or send a message by who gets that opening day or spring opener start. You know, that could be the up and coming arm. That could be the guys that stand out to me are the ones that they had either A, plans to move into the rotation quickly, or somebody who wanted to get a chance to start. That would be Rosenthal. And then the guy that they moved into the rotation quickly was Carlos. And I think that Martinez has gotten two opening spring starts, which they always try to telegraph it, and there's always a message behind it. Well, with that being said, I sent a message to Jeff Jones yesterday while he was in while they were practicing, and I asked him, I said, hey, I'm going to cheat a little bit, but who do you think gets that spring start? And I said, is there any chance it's going to be Reyes? And he said, I doubt it, because I feel like he's ticketed to the bullpen no matter what happens. He said, it wouldn't surprise me if it's Carlos. He said, and all the starters are lined up to throw that day. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And I was thinking, okay, well, I could see it being Martinez, because then that's kind of the message that we're talking about. He actually brought up Helsley. He said, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Helsley. I heard something today that was a little interesting, too, that it could be Brett Cecil, and that Brett Cecil will definitely throw Saturday. So I think that there's a lot of things in play here, and I'm really curious to see who it is. And I've heard that we may get word sometime around Wednesday who they're going to announce. But, you know, I would love to see it Reyes. That would be my choice, and I'm very selfish. There's someday I would love to see Martinez and Reyes at their peak in the same rotation.
Yeah, I completely believe that Brett Cecil will pitch on Saturday. I don't know if it'd be starting or not. Again, I wouldn't argue against that, because, you know, these starters are going to go one or two innings anyway. But I do think they're going to get him out into as much game situation as they can. It's interesting that the reports are that he looks good, but they have to see him against some sort of competition, because he's a guy that has to make the roster, or they have to cut him, you know, and that's an expensive cut. So, I'm not surprised that Reyes is an interesting situation in this idea that he is arbitration eligible at the end of this coming year, which is kind of crazy given how little he's actually pitched to the major leagues, but that's what happens when you spend a whole year on the major league DL. And the Cardinals are not one to really fiddle with this kind of stuff. You know, they're not one to manipulate service time or anything like that, but you got to figure it's going to be cheaper for them if Reyes is a really good middle reliever than if he's a really good starter. again, I don't think that plays into a whole lot of things, but it's interesting just to think about and see how they use him, you know, especially early on. Because if by the end of the year, if he's got it up to where he could start, that's fine. And they can make the argument, you know, people could argue whatever they want to in arbitration cases if they even get there, which typically the Cardinals don't go to arbitration. It doesn't really matter. But I just think it's interesting that he's in such a weird position to be almost arbitration eligible, but still try to prove himself. Is he a starter? Is he going to be a reliever? There's so many things that could be going on with Alex Reyes this year. And like you said, is, you know, he's been very electric in the past, but you know, between all the injuries and all the rust, is he going to be that guy that we thought he was going to be early on? I don't know. We'll find out. I'd really like to see him pitch Saturday or Sunday as well, with a chance to actually watch the games on Fox Sports Midwest. It'd be nice to get a chance to see him in real competition. And like you said, see if he can control his stuff, because that was what got him last year. He'd have stayed in the majors a lot longer if he wouldn't have walked everybody.
Yeah, and I think we kind of forget about that a little bit. And it was funny because from that side angle, and I don't know who watched the clip, Brendan Schaefer posted it, but it was Reyes throwing to Bader today, and there was probably four or five pitches, and Bader didn't swing at any of them. And I wondered about it because I was thinking, well, I know two that were in the dirt, but the other two you couldn't really tell, you know, from the side angle. Right. And I was like, boy, I hope that's not a situation where he has a trouble finding that glove. But, you know, all the reports are that he looked good, and, you know, I don't know how much that meant of the strike zone, but I have a feeling that would have been brought up rather quickly if he wasn't.
Yeah, I would think so. And I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's live BP. It's a little bit hard to, I mean, unless you're Rick Ankiel in 2001 or 2002, throwing, you know, whichever spring it was. I guess, one, he was really kind of wild, and two, probably had the same issues. Unless you're that wild, you know, it is hard to tell in batting practice, because, you know, Harrison Bader needs to be trying to lay off of sliders or whatever anyway. So it could be a good one that, you know, Bader's trying to trade himself to, you know, not swing at, versus one that he wouldn't have swung at anyway. Yeah, it's hard to know, but it is interesting to have him back on the mound. And it's so hard not to get excited about Alex Reyes.
Yeah.
I think we've got to try to, just because it just hasn't worked out so far. And I hate, you know, I think last year we were all excited. Even after 2 years, we thought, okay, Alex Reyes is going to be that guy. He's going to, you know, he's going to come back. And it wasn't. You know, we got all excited 2 years ago when he came up through the minors and was just destroying people in that rehab, only to pitch four innings in Milwaukee, and that was it. So no matter how good he looks, until he's pitched probably a month in the big leagues with pretty good results, I don't know that I would count on him for anything. Which is sad to say, but probably the most prudent aspect of the thing.
Sure, and you know, Mo's trying to temper expectations as well, basically saying that they don't have any. So, you know, we kind of had to follow our lead on that, and that tried to be the approach I've taken.
Mm-hmm. So we saw, like you said, it's a live BP today. We got to see Matthew Liberatore pitch against Nolan Gorman, which was probably a lot of fun for them, seemed to be. I saw a tweet later on that Liberatore said, hey, it's great to compete, but I appreciate being on the same side for once now. And I'm sure that's the case. You know, has anything really stood out yet? I don't know that there's been that much, but what is your first impressions here of spring camp?
It's so tough to say just because we haven't seen much of, you know, competitive at bats. I thought it was pretty cool to see Brad Miller take Reyes deep today, though. You know, kind of a taste of what we may get since we haven't been able to talk about Miller too much.
That's true.
Pretty interesting to see. I wonder how much we may see him playing time wise. Kind of a super utility type, but he brings a pretty good bat. It's funny. I remember back when he was with Seattle, and I can't remember if it was right after Peralta or during the time that we knew Peralta was probably going to be, you know, that we knew it was kind of the end for Peralta, that I really wanted them to bring him over from Seattle before he went to Tampa Bay. And I was like, well, if Tampa Bay gets him, that's going to be a pretty good get. I never realized he was injured the whole time, you know, aside from that, the 1 year that he hit real well. I was like, I didn't know that at all. So I think that's going to be an interesting bat to have. I think that that clears up a little bit of the issues that we've always talked about of not having anything off the bench to come in and you know, give a spark. And I think that that's a pretty good signing. But that stood out today. You know, it's tough not to be excited about your Gormans and your Carlsons a little bit to finally see them, even when they were in the shorts and t-shirts taking BP. I thought that was interesting, but, I, you know what I love to watch, and it gets old, and anybody listening to this, who's not, you know, the diehard fan, which I'm assuming they are if they're listening to this, I love to watch the infield work with Oquindo, you know, to see, there was a clip that was shown even early one of the days that showed Wong DeJong and Carpenter already there taking infield, and then within a day or so they were throwing to Goldschmidt, and Edmund was taking some time at short, and I was like, that says so much. Just that one moving picture says so many things. You know what I mean by that? Yeah. You just like, it's got everybody involved. So that's always exciting to see. And then, you know, to hear kind of some of the stories and whatnot. I don't know if anything necessarily stands out, but I'm just dang glad everything's back.
I'm glad you mentioned Miller, because it's, you know, back, you know, what was that, Wednesday or Thursday they signed him. And I wanted to talk about that, because that is a big addition to the bench. And when you look at now, you have a Miller, a left-handed bat that's got power. You've got Wieters, who, if depending on how they use him, of course, but definitely they used him somewhat as a pitch hitter last year. You're going to have somebody like, you know, oftentimes you have a Tyler O'Neill or a Lane Thomas on the bench. There's a lot of potential there. I mean, you're going to have Sosa, who's going to be more of a glove guy, but still might be able to get a hitter here and there. He's not going to give you the power that everybody else does, but after so many years, and last year's bench was pretty good, obviously, but there were so many years that the bench for the Cardinals was just, you know, you didn't want to see any of them come in. We're getting to where they're really developing this, you know, a good bunch of guys that could take over for a few games, and they can come in and, you know, pitch hit well. A lot of different options off the bench, and I like to see that, and it's nice to know that you're not relying on slap hitters to come up in the ninth with, you know, runner on first. You've got a guy that can put the ball into the gap or put it over the fence.
That's well said, because I was going to say that along the same thing. I love Munoz, but you can't deny the fact that he hit with absolutely no authority last year. It was very strange, especially considering what he brought off the bench in 18. It was just completely different. And then when you add in some, he doesn't play enough to kind of overcome a lot of the defensive inconsistencies that we see, and it was kind of a troublesome spot. That's why they were obviously not kidding about a left-handed bat. That's really what they wanted. They wanted a left-handed option, and I feel like they bought low on a good one and a guy that could serviceably probably play all four infield positions if he had to. Probably not great, but not going to kill you. It may even be like a, why am I drawing a blank on one of my favorite all time Cardinals? Redbeard, from the Angels, Spezio, you know, type deal. And that may not make that kind of clubhouse impact or whatnot, but, you know, kind of in that vein where you can have that left-handed bat. Considering that he's only been in the bigs since 2013, and this will be a seventh season, I still feel like he's the veteran type that you need, to where I didn't like the veteran type of bats going to the younger guys in Munoz, you know, if that makes any sense at all. And it may not, it may show to not prove one way or the other what's better to have, but I feel like you're going to get a better at bat from Miller with a little more charge in it than you would at Munoz at that point. And that pains me to say, because I really like Munoz.
Yeah, I think that's a good possibility. I think it's really going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Now, again, it's also, you know, it's kind of like replacing Jed Jerko to some degree. I mean, that kind of guy, right? I mean, different, hitting different, but can play all the infield, can give you power. I don't think we'll see him hit a home run at every position like Jerko did that year. because I don't think he's going to play that much. Hopefully, I mean, I don't feel like that's a guy you want to play every day. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and obviously that's not what he's there for. But injuries and such of the night are like, it feels to me that he's much better as that guy off the bench, play maybe a couple times a week at different positions, resting people. I don't feel like you want him out there all the time. Kind of like what we wanted with Jerko. He played, and he played well when he had to play by himself, but play all the time. But we always wanted him to be that super utility guy that was, you know, not quite a starter, but almost could be. And that's what it feels like Miller is.
That makes a lot of sense. And I've actually even heard him referred to as a left-handed Jerko, which, you know, I like Jerko and I liked what he meant to the ball club. So that I like to see that. And then you get a lot of flexibility with a guy like Miller. And then, you add in an Edmund, an everyday player who may not have an everyday position. And you know, it lengthens the roster. And that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now it does feel like it, like you say, it probably sends Munoz to Memphis so he could play every day, which is probably good because they really kind of need to know what he could do. And like you said, those veteran at bats, you know, it's not exactly this position you want a young guy to be in. Mm-hmm. You don't want him playing every other week or whatever the case may be. You want them playing regularly so they can see what they're doing. And it's hard for me because Munoz kind of came over from the Oakland organization already I think he'd already had some time in the major leagues. It's kind of hard to remember that he is still young, that he's not this veteran guy, because it's what we've seen him be used as. But he still probably has a little bit of development left in him, and they need to see at Memphis if he can, you know, hit on a regular basis. And if he can, I mean, there's a good chance that he's on his way to another organization. I'm not saying he's never going to be a Cardinal or he's never going to see Busch Stadium again, but I got to feel like his chances are a little bit slimmer with this kind of signing, you know, barring injury.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, and I felt like the writing was on the wall on that one too, and not necessarily as a detriment. I would like to see him get every day at bats at a, you know, in a lower leverage situation. He doesn't want to necessarily hear that, but he could go down and probably play third base every day in Memphis for a while, or possibly one of the corner outfield spots. I know they've got a ton of outfielders, or he could play second. You know, there's a lot of flex. He could probably bring the Edmund type flexibility to a Memphis situation and would benefit him because he gets 4 or 5 at bats a game.
Yeah, that probably would help a lot. The new rule changes came down this week, and they're not really, I don't really want to say they're new because we've heard about them for a long period of time, but they're just kind of official now, the 3-batter minimum, the 26-man out of the roster, and the 15-day DL, which I didn't realize until reading something else. I guess it was Derek Gould's chat today. The 15-day DL is only for pitchers. Pitchers go on the 15-day, other players go on a 10-day still, basically to stop the Dodgers from running their
exactly.
All the time. But that was interesting, a little bit of a quirk that I did not realize. I think the 3-batter minimum is probably the thing that's going to be the most looked at least in the early going, when you've got guys like Tyler Webb, Brett Cecil, as we've talked about, Andrew Miller. None of those guys, maybe Cecil, we haven't seen him in so long, are really completely left-handed specialists, but that's pretty much, especially for Tyler Webb, what they tried to use with last year. Now, there's an article out there that showed that they, you know, righties hit him better, but they didn't necessarily hit him that well. But I think the strategy is going to be very interesting on that. I mean, it feels like if there's a lefty leading off an inning, they're probably not necessarily going to go to a guy like Miller right there. They're going to wait and see if they get an out or two before they bring in a lefty specialist so that he doesn't necessarily have to face a whole lot of righties.
I'm reserving judgment on that for that very reason. I feel like you're going to have a little more manager creativity on that situation for that very reason. I think that you'll probably have you'll probably take your chances, you know, right-handed, or see how the lineup/bench shakes out. I was not as outraged about that rule as some were, but I'm not sure what that says, because any change that comes out, there's definitely outrage. So I don't know. I'm curious to see it. I don't think it'll be as big a deal as some people do, But I, you know, I'm willing to kind of hold judgment on that and kind of see the pluses and the minuses on it. And it's one of those deals where the end of an inning washes everything. So you can still be rather creative in how you do those things.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a game or two that the Cardinals lose this year, or maybe not. I mean, yeah, probably the Cardinals, but definitely every team's going to do this. There's going to be a game or two that they lose because of that rule. Because some, you know, they're not going to, you know, a lefty's going to come in and not get the lefty out and then face a righty, or, you know, the stuff that wouldn't have happened in the past. But that's the way it goes, unfortunately. I mean, they could lose it anyway. I mean, we saw, how many times have we seen, especially when Randy Choate was on this team, not getting the lefty out when they're the left-handed relievers. So you never know what's actually going to happen. I'm not real big on it just because it just feels stupid to some degree. And I don't think it changes the length of the game, which is what a lot of these things are kind of focused on, but we'll see how it goes. Sure. I mean, you know, and once we get into it, it may be fine.
No, and I agree. And it's one of those deals to where I am all in the camp of improving the game. Even some of the playoff rules. I wouldn't mind an expanded playoff. I want to see how the innings things goes. But then there's sometimes you're just like, it seems like they try to change some of the stuff that actually adds a minuscule amount of time to some of the things that they could change, which would be pretty substantial. And that would be stuff that's not necessarily on the field. That's kind of where some of my questions come from the change. I'm all about bettering the game. I'm all about opening it up to a younger audience, you know, all the things that they say they're doing. But some of these moves just don't feel like that's what it's leading to, and it's kind of silly that they're going that direction to do it. So I'm not sure. I'm ready to see how it plays out. And a lot of these new rules, give it a year or two and they're forgotten pretty quickly. I have a feeling you're right, though, that this one may stick out for a while if teams are blowing it because the matchups just don't fall. I mean, you only have so many roster spots, you can't get yourself out of some of these things. So I'm curious to see how that all goes. And, you know, the game's in a good spot, but in a weird spot. And it's crazy that a lot of the on-the-field stuff is what's getting changed when I don't feel like that's what necessarily makes the game 3+ hours.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and one thing they did change in these new rules, one of the rules that we hadn't necessarily heard, you know, for the last couple months, was that they changed the manager's review time from 30 seconds to 20 seconds, which, again, not a huge thing. But I'll tell you, if you want to speed up the game, is you don't let managers consult the video room before they make a replay call. And I think that's the best, because that's what my argument is. If you can't tell from your naked eye that's a bad call, then you probably just need to let it go.
Yeah.
I don't think replay is designed. I think we've had this argument before. People probably don't want to hear it again, but not an argument, I mean discussion. I just don't feel like replay is really designed to get that frame by, you know, where you have to, you know, you can't tell that the lace hit the guy, you know, when he popped off the bag by a fraction of an inch.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
I don't think that, and that's the kind of stuff, you know, that you're looking at that slows the game down, because the game is not, the length of game, as we always say, it's not all the problem. Part of the problem is how it goes, how it flows. And if the game's moving along and it's a good game, you look up and, oh, wow, it's been 3 hours. But if you're having to stop every, you know, half an hour to sit around and watch the umpires in the screen, you know, just everybody just stops, then that doesn't help anything.
Yeah. You're exactly right. The unintended plays are what hurts replay to me. You know, it's one of those, like, nothing drives me more insane than the guy clearly beats the ball but comes off the bag, because it's basically you can't stop. And last year when we were up there for the event, and Mo was talking about how they're making bases bigger and tackier so guys won't slide off of them, I'm like, that's a direct result of replay. And that's what I feel like that's an unintended, I don't think it was meant for that. And that's what drives me nuts, and that's what adds so much to it. You open Pandora's box now, because now you can't take it back, because every play is going to be reviewed. You know what I mean? And that's what I don't like. I mean, there's a lot of things they could have changed, and I think they changed some of the things that are just kind of ridiculous, and that's one of them. And it's one of those to where how many of those happen in a game, or we'll even say a week. We'll give them a little bit of headway of leeway on that. What? 7-8, you think, within a week of games of a guy coming off the bag? And some of those are even predicated by the guy just saying, hey, I wasn't out. You know what I'm saying? Then the hand goes up, then they go review. And you're exactly right. I mean, we're going frame by frame on these, and you're thinking, we're 3+ minutes into this.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, you know, when you think about why did people want replay? It's Dinkinger. It's
yeah.
Joyce with the call. I mean, the game, the ones that everybody's at the stand says, oh, wow, that is completely wrong. And it wasn't, you know, oh, did that guy maybe come off really? You know, I mean, that's just not what it's there for. Now, you've also seen, and maybe we'll use this to transition a little bit, you got to figure these video rooms that they have are what led to the Astros situation. That's what we're talking about, right? Because they were using the cameras, they go in the video room, determining the signs, banging on trash cans, all that kind of stuff. You don't have video rooms. We don't have this issue right now. And we're not all up in arms about what the commissioner is or isn't doing with the Astros. I just wish, you know, it'd be nice if they attacked it that way. But once these kind of things sneak in the door, they're really hard to get out.
Yeah, and you know what? The first thing, whenever you brought that up about sending a guy to the video room to see if he came off or if a lace touch X part of the, you know what I'm saying, where you were going with that, the first thing that popped into my head was, I don't remember when the 22nd deal was announced, but I wonder if that's in accordance to what they're going. There are going to be video room changes that we hear throughout spring, wonder if that was part of it. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, hey, if we're going to keep guys out of there, we're going to have to do this, and this is going to be a good opportunity to cut these 10 seconds off there to where it's not, you know, a stupid amount of time just waiting to see whether they decide to do this or not. But you're right. I think that technology is definitely going to be scrutinized on these things, because I think the investigation was good. I don't think that, you know, we're beating a dead horse on the stuff. And I'm so glad to hear the players calling out more than, you know, Turner was good today. Flaherty was good today. You know, guys that were beating up Manfred on the way that this was handled. And, you know, we could go on and on and on about that. But yeah, I think that we're going to start seeing a lot more strict, you know, following of rules as far as technology goes to keep this from happening, because this is honestly is getting bigger than the steroids.
Yeah. And I mean, they've been making changes over the last couple of years to access to those video rooms, even though it wasn't necessarily as great. I mean, what I was reading, one article, I think it was the Astros or maybe it was the Red Sox. I can't remember. We've got too many of them, but somebody, you know, basically the observers were there, but they weren't doing anything. So the players were just kind of going back and forth and still doing what they, you know, needed to do to steal signs. And nobody was stopping them when they should have been. You know, I think they've kind of tightened up on that last year. And they've already said, you know, Mike Shildt has said, the commissioner's come out and said, there's going to be modifications to the video rooms now. They're still trying to figure it out, but there's going to be some more of that this year. And, you know, technology always does allow for these things. And somebody's always going to try to find their way around, you know, some sort of loopholes. I don't think we usually see it so brazenly, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
As we did with Houston this time. I mean, you'd like to think there are at least some sort of gray area that, instead of going straight to, you know, obviously cheating. But, you know, again, once the technology's in the game, it becomes difficult. And, you know, I don't know that we'll ever have another scandal like this again, in part because of what all that's brought up to this, and in part because I think enough teams are going to be smart enough to keep changing signs and stuff and make it harder to decipher now. But you know, there's going to be some other stuff that probably comes out because of technology in the game, and that's just the way it is.
Sure. It will be evolving, you know, and sometimes the crooks stay ahead of the cops, you know, in those situations. I, you know, just my two cents, if the Astros have just gotten in their way so much, their own way, so much on this thing where it's almost an embarrassment now. And, you know, the what I don't like is let the kids play factor, where there's two or three of the Astros that were, you know, the focal point of that, are now look like they're, you know, arrogant idiots and feel like they can get away with anything. And it's a black eye. It's a black eye on baseball. And it's an embarrassment. And, you know, I don't know how you would handle player suspensions. I think that's a lot of the issue here, that I think that they were afraid to go up against the players union per se a little bit. And, I think that's a big part of it. But I don't know if guys are necessarily out of the woods. I would say that there's probably some pretty heavy stuff going on in Boston right now. And, you know, they're going through everything pretty meticulously. So it's rough, and it sucks that this is the only thing that the majority of what we're talking about now, especially when the sun's out and it's a beautiful game and they're back in spring and the games are going to be here before you know it. And, you know, these guys are just coming out as phonies, and guys that meant a lot to baseball, be it your Altuves and your Bregmans and your Correas, just need to shut up. And you just can't do it. And you just wonder, you know, you're just like, well, Crane's not doing himself any favors either. And it's just a black eye, and it's embarrassing.
I mean, there's always that natural inclination to defend yourself, I think.
And especially as somebody that competes at such a high level, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and you want to say, and you know, to be fair, I thought Correa did a pretty good job the first day, and then like you said, if he'd have stopped there, he'd probably been all right. It was the continuation and going after Bellinger and all these other things. You know, I don't know. It is a mess. It's disheartening, I think, to some degree, to see
no player. Good word for it.
Just not to see no player suspensions, and I get. Hey, they gave him immunity. You know, Tara and I talked about this some last night as well. This idea that maybe they thought this whole thing was a bigger issue in baseball, and they thought they better, you know, give immunity to the players so they could get a handle on it now. I think you're right. I think they didn't want to go up against the union. Although I also wonder, you know, there's a lot of mad players out here right now. We're seeing that. Would they want their union protecting the?
Sure.
You know, yeah. If Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman get, you know, 20-day suspensions or whatever it may be, and I'm not, you know, is the players union going to fight for that on principle, or are there enough of their members that say they deserve that, you know, let them have it? Well, I don't know. I don't know how that
goes. No, I completely agree with that. I when camp started, I knew that the wounds would open back up. There was no doubt about it, because they were free game and you can ask them whatever. And to see how the players have actually reacted, you do wonder if they're like, well, crap, we should have put some players' feet to the fire on this. I will tell you, the sledgehammer today may have been Mike Trout. You know, when the face of the game comes out and says some of the things that he did, and somebody who actually stays away from a lot of the controversy like that,
yeah,
there's a little bit of egg on Manfred's face right now, and you do wonder if they're not going to approach that and it' going to turn ugly, because they're going to make some suspensions right at the first of the season, and that, I mean, it could be an ugly situation. But in that same vein, to where they didn't want to go up against the players' union and gave them immunity and thought, hey, this may be widespread, we can't suspend the whole sport. I think there's probably a lot more focus on this, and yes, it may have gone on in other clubhouses, but it's been proven that it happened there at an alarming rate over several years. I mean, one of the good guys in baseball probably is done in baseball and may have a black eye on any Hall of Fame ballot with being Carlos Beltran now. And you're thinking, okay, how deeper does this go? I mean, there's an element of Altuve's embarrassed, and I think he is a pretty genuinely good guy, but he's caught. You know, you're going to have to wear it. Bregman has handled it with the bravado that he handles everything else, and he just simply looks stupid. Correa, I don't want to see him fall. I mean, that was one of the most impressive players I've ever seen come through Tulsa. But, I mean, he looks like a moron now. And you're right. I mean, it was just one of those. It's like, hey, you should have stopped at square one. You know, because now the bravado you showed in that one with Bellinger, you're just like, this is ignorant. You know, that you really look dumb on that. So, yeah, it's a tough situation. And I do kind of wonder if this isn't, this is super optimistic, and it probably get laughed out of people may hang up essentially on this one, but is this not, could the possibility of this being a rallying cry for some labor agreement, you know, if baseball and some of these higher quality players and higher number and higher profile players, I guess I should say, are all in agreement that more things need to be done?
Maybe, but I'm really taking this the other way. Because there are so many people, so many players, so upset with the commissioner and Major League Baseball that it makes me feel like they're going to stick to a hard line on anything. Yeah, I mean, there's that idea. You know, maybe they could come together somewhat on this, on, you know, video technology or whatever. But given what the players are saying about the commissioner, I mean,
yeah,
you know, when you go into that negotiating room, you know, he may not be the one that's there, but his presence is there. It'll matter.
Yeah.
I mean, his representatives are there. And I think right now the players union is not in the mood to negotiate anything with the commissioner.
Sure. Because
he's, you know, he didn't throw down the suspensions, and now he's saying, oh, well, don't throw at the Astros. You know, it's like already now if somebody gets hit, you know, there's going to be some suspension that, you know, this pitcher is going to get a longer suspension than anybody in Houston did. And then he's saying, and, you know, this discourse isn't really helpful. So you really don't need to be talking about it. Sorry, that's not going to, you know,
yeah.
You basically tell the players sit down and shut up. That's not going to go over well. And, you know, it's just Manfred between this, between the minor league contraction,
yeah,
between that playoff thing that I know you didn't have as much trouble with, I really didn't like at all. And a lot of people didn't. I'm just saying, I think that, you know, if you're buying your stock in Manfred, it's at its lowest.
Sure.
I would hope.
No, I agree. I agree. And that's I would be surprised if he is there past the labor agreement. I will say that because I think that he's muddied the waters that much. And as far as my outlook on the playoff, I would like for them to expand it with a plan, just not that plan.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel.
I don't, again, the commissioner serves at the pleasure of the owners. And out of this whole situation, Jim Crane didn't get punished. He had to give up draft picks and money, but the money was no big deal.
Sure.
The draft picks, okay, but that wasn't a punishment of him as much of his organization. He didn't have his players suspended, so he's still going to have a team that's probably going to win 100 games this year. He could have had a whole lot worse, I think, is what it boils down to. And I think the owners are looking at that and looking like Manfred's still protecting their interests, whether it's financially or whether it's a situation like this where they're not going to get necessarily the you know, hammer dropped on them. I don't, as much as fan base is uproared about him and as much as players are uproared about him, I don't think the owners are, and that's what matters. I mean, I think they're content with him, and maybe that would change if there's a labor stoppage, but it would be after it because they're not going to fire him in the middle of a strike. So I don't know. I'm kind of feeling like he's going to be there for a while, if nothing else, just, you know, because the owners probably don't want to go through the process again.
That's frightening. Yeah. It's, just because I don't know in today's age, I understand that, you know, when was the NHL full season strike? Are we pulling up?
Had a couple of them, haven't
well,
they?
Well, 20 years ago, maybe. Do you think it was maybe that long? It may have been in the 2000s, to be honest with you. I can't really remember.
They had the one that was the whole season was 2004-2005.
Okay, so about 15 years.
They had another one in 12 and 13 that canceled a lot of games.
Okay. Well,
they also had one in 94, 95. So I didn't realize they were on strike at the same time the baseball was.
And it,
I did know that.
I don't know if baseball can recover from that, considering that, you know, the search for youth in the fan base is so heavy right now. That's what worries me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Baseball right now, I think we all can agree that is a very regional sport with, you know, national attention, if you will, but people are focused on their team. And that's part of baseball. You can't watch 162 Cardinal games and still watch a whole lot of other games. Not like football, where you can watch two or three teams, all their games, you know, because they're on different times and stuff. Pretty much if you're watching the Cardinals, you can't watch the Brewers or the White Sox or whatever. You know, you're kind of stuck with one team. So I think that drives it to the regionalism. But you're right. I think if you take that another underpinning of that out, if you take another strike, like of any length of time, it's difficult. I mean, it may work better in some degree now because players can get their message straight to the public with Twitter and social media, and maybe there's a little bit less inclination to immediately join with the owners. But overall, I think there's a lot of a pox on both your houses, and people say, well, if we're going to do this again, I'm out. You know, I know it's been 25 years since baseball had their big strike, but there's a lot of people that still remember that pretty vividly.
Oh, yeah.
I know people that got away from it and really never came back.
I completely agree. I know several people that were like that. I mean, it's weird. It's, I mean, not close acquaintances, but guys I would consider friends.
Yeah. And so you do it again, you know, you do run that risk of having problems, and there's a lot of things that go on. So, you know, that's still another couple of years down the road, but this situation has not helped that at all.
It's tenuous. There's no doubt. I agree.
Yeah. All right, we've gone about an hour. We could talk, I'm sure, an hour or more on Houston and the expansion and all that kind of stuff, of the expansion of the playoffs and all that kind of thing. But we'll just let it die out right there. I think that's a good spot to end it at. Like I said, Alan and I will probably be back with you again next Monday. After that, the Cardinals will have played, well, three games. We'll have had two games with the Mets on the weekend and then the Miami. This is a little bit of a weird schedule. Usually the Cardinals start with the Marlins. They're going to be three games in before they play the Marlins. Yeah. That's a little bit different for the spring training.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know that the Braves wanted to move further south so they can get close to everybody, but it's still the unbalanced schedules in the spring are so funny how everybody in that Jupiter, Miami, and everything corridor play so much.
Yeah. Well, it's gotten a little better because what was it? I guess it was Houston and Washington that have moved into that area.
Yeah. Too?
So
yeah.
You've got like six teams instead of four. Because it used to be Miami and the Mets, I think you oftentimes, but now you've got the Braves and others that the trips are a little bit better.
Absolutely. Maybe
for those players. So anyway, we'll have three games to talk about next week. So we'll have a lot more actual data. That means pretty much nothing because it's spring training, but you know,
at least
that's all we're going to have to talk
about. We'll see appearances, which will make a difference. So
that's right. And decisions are going to be made on this data too. So, I mean, it's whether it's worthless or not there, it's going to have some sort of meaning. So we'll have a chance to talk about it. So until then, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!